Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize, at least you've come to realize, that most of the following institutions are corrupt: political, religious, military, economic, and media, and that they are counterproductive and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-376-45. I was appalled to hear this morning that the University of North Carolina, an investigation has revealed that its student athletes didn't go to class. That over the last decade, there have been special classes that the university's own athletic counselors have directed the university's highest profile athletes to take that didn't actually meet, that didn't have any requirements, that didn't teach anything. How do you call, dear NCAA, a student athlete, if they're not students? You came up with this myth of student athlete because you didn't want to pay them, because you wanted all of the money for yourselves and your member organizations, billions of dollars. So you came up with the myth of student athlete, except they're not students. Now I want you to tell me, dear NCAA, how does North Carolina still have a football program, a basketball program, a sports program, now that we know that their students weren't students? Shouldn't that be the number one thing you're monitoring?
The other thing is here is that UNC football graduation rate was 75%. That's 6% higher than the national average.
Great, but they didn't go to class.
I find it funny that only 3 out of 4 guys were like, "Yeah, man, I could get a degree just for sitting here." Well, yeah, let's do it. I'll
get a degree for playing basketball.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Well,
great.
Their basketball rate is an 88%, 22%.
Oh, yeah, because they have really special programs for the basketball program. That's the program that actually caused the investigation. Now, let's look at the NCAA. You look at the current Heisman Trophy winner and the team that won the national championship last year. Its leader has been accused of rape, not once, but twice. He's been accused of signing 900 autographs with a known agent, an agent where other players who have engaged with him have been suspended. He is known for yelling obscenities in the middle of the campus, abusive statements towards women. He's known for shoplifting. Now, he continues to play. No sanctions at all against that school. You look at Auburn when they won the national championship and they had at their helm a quarterback whose father was shopping him, asking schools to pay $200,000 to $300,000 for the right to sign their son for 1 year. No one seems to care. The NCAA is a complete sham. What a group of scumbags. Emmert and the rest of that out of control, immoral, irrational, ignorant bunch goes and posts, what, 4 years of scholarship reductions on SC, followed by 4 years where they have to stay under those reductions because some wannabe agent, not even an agent, a wannabe agent engages with one of the student athlete's fathers. And when it's obvious that the penalties were egregious, the NCAA wouldn't reduce them, and yet with Penn State, where they have a coach not only engage in a dozen acts of pedophilia on campus, but have this athletic director, the president, and the football coach all turn a blind eye to it, and their penalties are forgiven. It is an absolute, complete farce, a complete and total scam. The NCAA should be disbanded. Is it any wonder that America's collegiate institutions are graduating immoral students, people who can't tell the difference between right and wrong? Is it any wonder that our nation is in such bad shape? The heads of these institutions don't have any better ability to tell right from wrong than this? The whole thing's a sham, a fraud, a group of immoral hypocrites. If they actually had a conscience, they'd be embarrassed. But no. I'm disgusted by it all. I've stopped watching, and I used to be a sports fanatic when it came to college football. I don't watch anymore. I don't watch any collegiate sports anymore. I'm just revolted by the whole thing. Don't attend any function associated with my alma mater. The whole thing is an absolute disgrace. It's symbolic of what has happened to America. It is an essential ingredient in the downfall of America. Yesterday, we learned that there was a shooting at the World War II War Memorial and Parliament in Canada. And this follows the day prior where a Muslim had run down in his car a Canadian and killed him. And we went over yesterday a long explanation of the fact that when the political leadership of Canada said that it was clear he had been radicalized and we should be alert for radicals, I told you there is no such thing as a radical Muslim. Once again, we're being told that the shooting that took place, murder, again yesterday in Canada, was by a radical. Yes, of course, he was a Muslim. I'm going to remind you what I said yesterday. There is no such thing as a radicalized Muslim. There is no such thing as a radical Quran. There is no such thing as a radical Hadith. There is no radical Prophet. There is no radical Allah. Allah is Allah. The Quran is the Quran. The Hadith is the Hadith. Sharia is Sharia. Islam is Islam. Period.
How is it that only Islam and Muslims ever get described as radical? I've never heard of a radical Christian. Is there a radical Christian out there? Is there a radical Jewish person?
No, when Christians are accused of bad behavior, they're almost always labeled fundamentalists. Mm-hmm. Now, typically, the Christians that pursue bad behavior aren't fundamentalists, but that's the term that is used. A Muslim that engages in jihad, a Muslim who murders, who lies, who steals, who rapes, who kidnaps, is a fundamentalist in the sense that they are adhering to the example of Muhammad. Muhammad was a terrorist. Muhammad was a rapist. Muhammad was a pedophile. Muhammad was a mass murderer. Muhammad was a kidnapper. Muhammad was a slave trader. These were not unusual behaviors for Muhammad. These were not minor flaws in Muhammad's behavior. This was the central core of his behavior. He was first and foremost a terrorist. Islam was financed. It grew entirely based upon terrorism, the slave trade, kidnapping, and thievery. Without those things, Islam does not exist today. It is a statement of irrefutable fact. The murdering, terrorizing, raping, kidnapping Muslims that are wreaking havoc with our world today are good Muslims. They haven't corrupted their religion. They are not radicalized. They are fundamentalist. In Islam, the term for them is Salaf. The Salaf pay attention to the Hadith. They are attuned to what the first Muslims said and did. They pay attention to Muhammad's example and emulate it. These are facts. These facts are irrefutable. When politicians and the media present the Muslims that permeate acts of terror as radicals, they are showing their ignorance. They're showing that they're irrational. They're being immoral. They're being counterproductive. They're demonstrating that they have been corrupted by political correctness. It is a lie. The world will either come to grips with the fact that Islam is rotten to the core, that it is deadly, that it is a criminal doctrine, that it has to be labeled as criminal, it has to be banned, and that good Muslims have to be quarantined and isolated, and the world needs to disengage from majority Islamic countries, not selling them weapons, not buying their oil, totally and completely disengaging. Or Muslims are going to destroy the world. Those are your choices. So if you think it's compassionate to play Ben Affleck and to pretend because of your opinions that Muslims are good and it's only a few rotten apples and it's racist and unfair to tar the entire religion with the behavior of those who are murderous, terrorizing, raping, plundering liars, then the consequence of your misguided opinions is going to be the destruction of the world as you know it. You will be victimized by those you've chosen to protect. I'm telling you that there is a 0% possibility that this warning I have just offered will not come to pass. 0%. It is the political, religious, media, and military excuses and justifications for Islam, tolerance for Islam, that will ultimately lead to the destruction of the world as we know it, and will bring a literal hell on earth. The dude was identified as the suspect in the shooting. He wasn't identified in the suspect shooting. He's dead. His carcass bled out. On Parliament Hill in Ottawa, Canada, Michael Zaeff Bibeau is a Canadian born in 1982, reportedly of Algerian descent. Ottawa police spokesman Chuck Benoit, that's an important name, I want you to remember that, there'll be a test at the end of this program, told CBS, that too could be part of the pop quiz, that two or three gunmen may have been involved. That does not appear to be true. Zaeff Bibeau shot a soldier at the National War Memorial before entering the center block and firing off more shots. He was raised in Quebec, according to CTV News, and was a convert to Islam. He was arrested 5 times while in Montreal. 3 times was for drug possession, and 2 more times for not respecting the conditions of his parole. 2 days in a row, Muslims have killed Canadians in cold blood. It's not murder in the sense that it's a random act of belligerence, as occurs in Chicago on a regular basis with gangbangers earning their right to join the gang. It's not an issue of drug wars, where drug purveyors are shooting and killing other drug purveyors. It's not a case of someone trying to steal money for drugs and randomly shooting and killing the occupant of the home they're trying to rob. It's not an act of domestic violence where a jilted lover comes and kills the other one. Nope. This is a religiously motivated killing. This is someone who has been convinced by their God, by their scriptures, by their religion, to go off and kill those who don't share their religion. This is something worth talking about. When a gangbanger randomly shoots a child, it's a tragedy. And it tears at our hearts that a innocent life was squandered because somebody wanted to be part of a drug cartel. Gets that. But their motivations aren't worth considering. When someone kills in the name of their religion, and when others in the name of that same religion make a habit of it, perpetrating 99.9% of the terrorist acts in the world today, then figuring out the common denominator and talking about it, exposing it, condemning it, has value.
Not to mention that the people that say that that's not what Islam is, that's not what it means, they're also not going, they're not going out of their way to try and stop it. They're saying
it doesn't
matter.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. I mean, by the way, Scott, I hate that argument. I really do. I hate that argument with a passion. The argument is promoted that, if Islam wasn't a terrorist dogma, if Islam wasn't a declaration of war against all humankind, then there would be Muslims aplenty that were out speaking against Muslims killing and terrorizing. So the fact that there aren't Muslims by the plenty out speaking against the religion, it says that the religion must be a declaration of war and a terrorist manifesto. I hate that argument. Let me tell you why I hate that argument. Because what people choose to say, their opinions about Islam are irrelevant. Whether their opinion is that Islam is a terrorist dogma, whether their opinions is that Islam is a declaration of war against all humankind, whether their opinion is that Islam means peace. Their opinions of Islam are irrelevant, no matter what they say. It should never be used as a justification for identifying the motivation for terrorist acts. It's only one thing that matters. Islam has a singular founder. It has only five books that were compiled within 250 years of that founder's death. The founder is Muhammad. His God is Allah. His scriptures are comprised of the Quran and Hadith. What do they say? The two arguments that are foisted in our face regarding Islam are opinions. The majority of Muslims aren't terrorists, so it's only the few who are giving the religion a bad name. That's like saying that in Nazi Germany, recognizing that 80% of Germans voted for the Nazi candidates, that in Nazi Germany, among those 80% who voted for the Nazi candidate, because the majority of those individuals weren't part of perpetrating Blitzkrieg, and the majority of them were not manning the gas chambers at concentration camps, that Nazism was getting a bad name by the few who were. If you want to judge Nazism, you read Mein Kampf. If you want to judge Nazism, you listen to the speeches by Adolf Hitler, by Goebbels. If you want to judge Nazism, you look at the behavior and the words of Adolf Hitler and those who were closest to him. If that's rotten to the core, then Nazism is rotten to the core. The fact that there are some people who associate with the Nazi party who were not belligerent is irrelevant. Same thing is true with Islam. If you want to know whether or not Islam is the problem, you look to Muhammad. Islam has but one founder, one prophet. His name is Muhammad. If you want to know whether or not Islam is rotten or just a few people who have engaged in terrorism are rotten, then you need to look at the words and deeds of Muhammad. To do so, there are four sources, and only four sources, that explain the words and deeds of Muhammad within 200 to 250 years of his death. Only four. The Quran is not one of those four. It's the biography of the prophet. It's called the Sirah, compiled by Ibn Ishaq. If your primary language is English and you want to read it in an English translation, Ghulim is the translator, Oxford Press is the publisher. If you wish to know the history of Islam's formation, Islam's foremost and earliest Quran scholar, Al-Tabari, compiled hadith that he arranged in a chronological order to explain the formation of Islam and the behavior of Muhammad. It's called the History of Islam, the Tariq in Arabic. Al-Tabari is the compiler. It's translated into English and published by SUNY, the State University of New York. If you wish to have topical collections of hadith so that you could know what Muhammad's actions and words were related toward women, towards blacks, towards slavery, toward terrorism, towards fighting, towards killing, towards lying, towards Jews, towards Christians, then there are two collections that were compiled within 250 years of Muhammad's death. They are by Bukhari and by Muslim. You can find copies of them online, published by Muslim Students Associations. And there's also a compilation that was published by the Saudi Arabians and their publishing company in Medina. The behavior of Muhammad and his companions, the words and deeds of Muhammad and his companions, comprise 100% of Islam. If Muhammad was a terrorist, and he was, leading 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era, if Muhammad declared war on all humankind, which he did in the Pledge of Aqaba, if Muhammad committed acts of robbery, of kidnapping, and engaged in the slave trade, which he did, if Muhammad was a serial rapist and pedophile, which he was, then Islam is rotten to the core. No other founder, no other example. And the Quran, which is nothing more than Muhammad's own words, tells Muslims to follow Muhammad's orders and example. Muhammad's orders and example are made known in those four books that I just listed. If you want to speak about Islam, read them. If you aren't willing to read them, don't offer an opinion on Islam. Don't tell us what Islam is or isn't. Don't do what Ben Affleck did. Don't do what President Barack Hussein Obama has done. Don't say anything about the religion until you have read those four books. And then use them to put the Quran in chronological order and set it into the context of Muhammad's life. And then you read the Quran. Once you have done that, you're in a position to express your conclusions about Islam. But until then, you've got nothing but unfounded opinions. I want to tell you, the world's continuing to misrepresent Islam. and to use the terms like radicalized and extremist, and to say such stupidity as the Islamic State is not Islamic, that Islam is a religion of peace, all of the world leaders, all of the religious leaders, all of the media spokespeople, all of the Justice Department officials, all of the military officers who make those statements ought to be embarrassed. Those statements are ignorant, they're irrational, they're immoral. And it is incredibly savage, merciless to speak on behalf of, to exonerate a religion that perpetrates 99% of the world's terrorist acts. When you speak on behalf of a religion, distinguishing a religion from its most heinous behaviors, the behaviors that it inspires, all you're doing is soliciting more of those behaviors. There was an article today that was published by CNN. It begins, it said, the day after a gunman, as opposed to a Muslim, killed an army reservist in the Canadian capital of Ottawa, many questions remain. The questions only remain because this journalist and the politicians that he or she is surveying are ignorant. And, you know, there's no excuse for being ignorant when you're committing your armed forces to fight a battle against an enemy that you do not know, that you do not understand. There is no excuse for being ignorant when there is a religion that is terrorizing and murdering the people that you have sworn an oath to protect. The first question is, why did he shoot? Because he's a Muslim. That's why he shot. Because Muhammad ordered Muslims to be jihadists. Because Muhammad said that any peaceful Muslim ceases to be a Muslim, and that good jihadist Muslims must kill him so that Allah can torture that Muslim in the hottest places in hell. He shot because Islam corrupted his ability to be moral. Why did he target Nathan Carrillo? Because Nathan, as a reservist at a military shrine, was considered an enemy of Islam because Canada had joined with the United States in killing Muslims in Iraq and in Syria and in Libya and other places around the world. It's not hard. Is he connected to the militant group ISIS? Doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Why is it that everyone that committed an act of terrorism that was a Muslim previously had to be connected in some way to Al-Qaeda, or they were a lone wolf? And now, since Al-Qaeda no longer exists and the archenemy is the Islamic State, why now? Was he connected to the Islamic State? What is that going to do? Justify the bombing of the Islamic State? He's a Muslim. The Islamic State is an Islamic organization. They're connected because they worship the same demonic god, because they read the same disgusting Quran, because they follow the example of the same repulsive prophet. That's it. There's nothing more to them than that. There's nothing more to this issue than that. So CNN then says, here's a list of what we know and what we don't know about the Ottawa shooting. What we know, the Canadian Prime Minister, Stephen Hawking, called the attacker a terrorist. No, he's not a terrorist. He's a Muslim. That's what he is. And when a Muslim kills someone who is in the military, they're not acting as a terrorist. When they kill a civilian, then that could be considered an act of terrorism. If they randomly kill a civilian, it's an act of terrorism. If they kill somebody in the government, the judicial system, or a soldier, it's not terrorism. Canada, the United States, has declared war on the Islamic State. That means that anybody in the military or the government of those countries is fair game. It's not an act of terrorism. He was wrong. Now, if he'd called him a Muslim, that would have been meaningful. It would have been accurate. Calling him a terrorist is wrong. That gets right back to this stupid mindset that we're engaged in a war against terrorism. No, we're not. Terrorism is a tactic. Terrorism is a tactic perpetrated either by religious or political zealots to make opposition to them unbearable. It's when military might is insufficient to accomplish the goal and you terrorize people to capitulate. I want to make this absolutely and perfectly clear. If you know, as Barack Hussein Obama does, he was raised in a madrasa with a Muslim father in a Muslim school in a Muslim country. If you know about Islam, and you go off and make speeches that deceive people about it, that's the single worst thing that you can do. Hell is too good an outcome for people who do that. That's reprehensible. It's absolutely disgusting. The man ought to be impeached. He ought to be imprisoned. If you are like Ben Affleck and you're just stupid and you go flap your lips out of complete and total ignorance when somebody presents to you a reasoned conclusion and two people who are extraordinarily savvy about this. One of them is a neuroscientist who has made his avocation understanding religion. And he calls Islam the mother load of bad ideas, and you don't know squat about it. And you flap your lips and then mislead on behalf of religion, that's inexcusable. Now, in your case, you ought not be in prison, but no one should ever watch your movies again. No one should pay attention to anything you have to say. You ought to become a complete and utter laughingstock. Now, if you run for a political office, like Stephen Harper, and as the leader of that country, you swear an oath to protect your citizens, and at a time where the most deadly plague on this planet is Islam, and it is killing your citizens, and you don't know enough about it to speak intelligently of it, to expose it and condemn it, you never should have run for office. You ought to resign. You're without excuse. The same thing is true if you are in the military or the judicial system of that country. You have a responsibility to know, or don't hold those jobs. Islam is not complicated. You want to understand Islam? Read the Quran. Read the Sirah, the biography of Muhammad. Read the Tariq, which is the history of Islam's formation. Read them. For free, 50 hours of your time, you can read Prophet of Doom, which presents the Quran, reordered chronologically, set into the context of Muhammad's life, using the Tariq and Sirah. All there laid out for you, from beginning to end. From stupidity to murder. Everything that's important to know about Islam. all laid out before you. It isn't a case with Islam that it's subject to interpretation. It's repulsive. It's murderous. It's deceitful. It's destructive. It's deadly. The evidence is overwhelming. It is absolutely undeniable. The only thing that stands in the way in people understanding why Muslims do as this Muslim did in Canada is apathy. An unwillingness to take the time to learn the truth. And I'm going to tell you, if you're just an average schmo and you're listening to this, you've stumbled on it from somebody sent it to you or you were searching for some other thing, and you don't know squat about Islam, shame on you. Your country has declared war on it. Almost no matter where you are. It's responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist acts. It's abusing women. It's responsible for well over 100 million genital mutilations. It's responsible for the most deadly wars on the planet today. Shame on you. You know, you're squandering your life if you don't know the Torah. And if you know the Torah, the very foundation and perspective that it provides, that understanding that it provides, and the thrill of discovery that it conjures, puts you in a position where you're going to have a thirst to know those things which are evil. In fact, the Torah presents the good and bad of everything. And so you'll have a desire to know Pauline Christianity and why it's rotten, and Islam and why it kills. Don't squander your life.